Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. This episode of the Let's Get Busy podcast is sponsored by Gallery Nucleus, a gathering place for the illustration, art-loving community. Gallery Nucleus specializes in high-quality prints and art books from some of your favorite children's book illustrators, including Dan Santat, Joy Ang, Adam Rex, Scott Campbell, and John Clausen. Gallery Nucleus is featuring an Adam Rex solo exhibition and the Art from Home from March 28th through April 12th, and invites you to join them on March 28th from 2 to 5 p.m. for a panel and signing with Adam Rex. Can't make it to California? No worries. Gallery Nucleus is offering listeners of the Let's Get Busy podcast 15% off all prints, shirts, and books by entering in the promo code BUSY15 at checkout. Visit gallerynucleus.com to browse original artwork and prints and bring your favorite art home. Remember, that's BUSY15, BUSY15, at gallerynucleus.com. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, kidlit notables, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner, an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. This is episode number 137 with Amy Krauss Rosenthal, author of I Wish You More, which is published by Chronicle Books and illustrated by Tom Lichtenheld. Amy's actually the author of a ton of amazing picture books, including Little Pea, Cookies, Bite-Sized Life Lessons, Exclamation Mark, Duck, Rabbit, and Spoon. She's also taken the TED stage twice and made an abundance of short films. Amy puts a lot of beauty into the world, and I'd like to think it's because she sees so much beauty in it. I know you'll find some here in listening to Amy share her work with us. If you like what you hear, I encourage you to download other episodes of Let's Get Busy on your computer or handheld device by downloading the Stitcher Radio app or by visiting the iTunes Store. Rating the podcast or writing a review on iTunes helps let me know what you think of these weekly chats, but also helps others discover the podcast, so consider taking a minute to share your thoughts. And on that note, it's time to start episode number 137 of the podcast with Amy Krauss Rosenthal. Let's get busy! Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Amy Krauss Rosenthal. I am beyond excited to talk to you tonight.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Matthew.
Oh, Amy, my word, where do we start? Why don't we just go up front and start with the book you have or one of the books that you have coming out with Tom Lichtenheld, and then we'll just let this go from here. But to start with, can we please talk about I Wish You More?
Let's do it.
Why don't I allow you the introduction first before I go too gushy on this? Can you maybe give just a book talk, a summary of what I Wish You More is?
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, I Wish You More is sort of a, it's a love letter to those that you love. And it's a series of wishes that range from very sincere and kind of grand sweeping life wishes to smaller, more sort of in between playful wishes. So I wish you more up than down. I wish you more hugs than ug.
Yeah. The one that resonates with me. And I've read this now to my son. I've read it to my students at school. It's one of those, it's a great joy to be able to get these books ahead of time and read them and feel that before I get to talk to guests like you. But I wish you more give than take. I feel like I wear that on my sleeve now. I wish you more give than take.
And what's hard to sort of describe in just our voices out in the air is that obviously there's a big play between the language and the illustrations that Tom Lichtenheld and I did together. Well, he illustrated, but the conceptually together, we work as a team on everything. And this was really a team of thinking about the pairing of the words and the images. I wish you more pause than fast forward.
Yeah.
And that's an image, one of my favorite images in the book. And it's a little girl lying on the sidewalk looking at a caterpillar.
Yeah. Now I want to jump into talking about Tom, but just, I want to just say, I think summing up what so many of us feel about your books, that it's moments like this, it's books like this that creating these words, and I know that you are one because I know you from the short films you've made and from your TED Talks and from just your work. I know your voice in the community. I know that you are a person on a mission to just spread lovely around and help people see it in themselves and see it around them. And this is one of those. I see these words and the illustrations working together, and it's just a lovely experience. It's a lovely thing to hold. It's something that is so special to have my son in my arms or my readers in front of me and to be holding this book and feeling like we're all just sharing in this moment and everything stopping around us to just let these words echo inside of us. It's really something wonderful, Amy, that you have with words.
Thank you so much. The thing that was there's so many parts of this journey of making this book with Tom and with Chronicle Books, of course, that was layered and nuanced because, well, just sort of backing up, even the concept of playing off of more and really, as you well know, this is nothing about like wishing you more stuff, right? It's all about, right? It's the opposite of that. It's all these values and experiences. I wish you more we than me. I wish you more treasures than pockets. And the little boy's picking up seashells, right? So
oh yeah, and they're in the I like the top shirt pocket and all that too. They're just
and so thinking about the word more, that is actually the first word that I ever spoke.
I saw in the dedication more.
So it really is kind of interesting to think, as you know, a little whatever it was, 9 month, 12 month old baby saying that word, and now creating this all these years later around that word. So, yeah.
Is that something that you were aware of, that you've always known that your first word was more? Was it something that when you shared this story, I don't know that you. That it came back somehow that...
No, I always knew that story because, of course, the joke is in our family that at the time it was about my love of food. So, I mean, that's kind of like Krauss family lore. I embraced what you can interpret it any number of ways, right? So then it just became like, well, it's a pretty good motto in general, like just wanting more in life, so...
Yeah, wanting more people around you, wanting more of that feeling, wanting just it's all. You're right, more is a good one.
Cramming it all in while you can.
Cramming it.
Right.
When you work with Tom, because I realize that you and Tom both live in Chicago, when you work together then, or maybe can I just go back and ask about you first working together? When you first worked together, was that a collaboration with Were you paired? Was your text manuscript paired with him, and then a friendship blossomed, or did you know him outside of your work?
Okay, so we were introduced by a mutual. Tom and I both come to this part of our careers. The former career in advertising. So I was a copywriter. I wrote commercials for the first decade out of college, and Tom was an art director. And I don't know how much you know about that field, but in that field, art directors and writers are paired together. And I had been out of the business for a while. Tom was just sort of like starting to write children's books and was kind of doing two things. And a mutual advertising friend of ours, a boss, a wonderful gentleman, Marshall Ross, introduced the two of us and said, you guys both have advertising in your backgrounds. You guys need to know each other. You're both doing kind of, you know, in the same zone. And we had a little date at Millennium Park. This was a number of summers ago. And I brought with me at the time a little mock-up that I had done. So the first time we met, and I brought with me this little mock-up that I drew of the first iteration of the OK book.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, it's just my little doodle drawing of the okay guy and the text that I had at the time.
The first time you ever met him, you brought...
I did. We were just I think it was kind of like a show and tell thing, you know?
So I love it. Yeah.
And we didn't know we were going to work together per se. We were just, as two people who like to make stuff, we were having lunch and, you know, you got your bag of tricks. And I pulled it out and I showed him and he said, oh, yeah, I'd like to draw that. And so we just started playing around together, and it was pretty quickly we realized we had just a really good synergy. And I love working with Tom because now, you know, we've done quite a few books together. And the thing that's so awesome, I mean, there are many things that are so awesome about working with him, but because of our shared background, we sort of speak a similar language and in collaborating. And the other thing is that Tom... it's really rude because he is a really good writer and a really obviously amazing illustrator. He's got both those things in his arsenal. And I cannot illustrate nearly as well as he can write, but I do think very visually. I am a visual thinker, and it's a big part of my work has always been kind of in my own way coming up with visuals and stuff. So together... If you notice, like on our books, we don't say on the cover written by this person and illustrated by that person, because both things are so interwoven that it doesn't feel accurate to put those stamps on it.
It's wonderful that idea of not knowing or not even be able to tell anymore where one person ends and the other begins, with the work, with the collaboration being that tightly woven.
Yeah, it's really... Quite fun.
Yeah, I'm from the school library. So one of the things that we love as much as we do about collaboration is when you get those projects where the end product couldn't have existed without both people working together. No one person could have done it alone. So that's a good thing you have going.
That is exactly. And we can move on or come back to this, but the story of how Duck Rabbit came to be is exactly the epitome of collaboration. And
please tell.
Well, so Tom and I, we were presenting at a school. This was shortly after the OK book was published, and we were doing a school visit, and we had the whole thing planned. And then Tom, on the board, spontaneously drew this duck rabbit illustration, the, you know, optical illusion. And he says to this, you know, gym full of like several hundred kids, okay, guys, look at it this way. What is it? And then they go, look at it this way. And then you hear this pause, and then, you know, 400 kids go, oh, like, you know, getting the optical illusion. And I'm off to the side because he hadn't shown this to me before. I'd never heard of it. And I was like, oh my God, that's the coolest thing ever. And after the presentation, I was like, ran up to him at the end. I'm like, Tom, you never showed me that. It's fantastic. What's that from? And he said, well, I had learned it from his art professor in college 30 years prior. He had been doodling. He said he was doodling the little duck rabbit optical illusion for 30 years on napkins and like meetings, you know, on back of envelopes, doodling this little guy. Well, the minute I saw this, I said, Tom, it's a book. And he's like, Amy, it's one illustration. And I was like, no, I hear it's a debate between these two kids. And that is exactly the moment that Duck Rabbit was born. And I like to say that, you know, here is the prime example of when one and one is greater than, you know, it can be 100, because here's Tom. Did it look like after 30 years of doodling the thing that he was going to come up with the idea? Like, all indications were not, right? And I certainly would have never come up with it, because I hadn't even heard of this optical illusion. But the moment we came together, bam, you know?
Oh, that's amazing to know that it was an illusion from that long ago too, that he held on to it. And just the idea that a story can grow from the tiniest seed that way. But I mean, I read that too, and I've read it, I don't know how many times, being, you know, a librarian, we that's what we do. But the illusion is just so, I just assumed, I was waiting for you to tell me, oh yeah, so Tom and I were at this author thing, and he had me drawing on this rare occasion and had me draw a duck, and I couldn't figure out how to do it. The way that things just, the way that a drawing could present itself in two different ways is fun. I love how static his image is in that too, that it's just, that duck rabbit is just there in the middle of the page the entire book.
Yeah, I mean, and that was, yeah. So
how smart. Well, you two have really gotten down to I feel like a really great science. You figured out how to showcase the simplicity and the grandeur and the simplicity of a picture book. I mean, with exclamation mark, you did a similar thing too. Here's a mark that we've looked at forever. And to tell the story that you did behind it, I think it causes you to look at the world a different way. Specifically, it causes our readers to look at their world a different way. How many kids after reading that book are going to look at an exclamation mark the same way?
Well, and that story, you know, I think it's interesting talking to you, Matthew, and thinking about the genesis of these different books, because the two that we just mentioned, Duck Rabbit and exclamation mark, are on two ends of the spectrum in terms of process for me. Duck Rabbit was the fastest book that I'd ever worked on, in meaning from the moment it was, you know, just the inkling, the little smallest seed of an idea, as I just described, to it being published in, you know, on the shelf in the store. Like, that was 1 year. That was the fastest it ever happened.
1 year?
That's
oh,
super
my
fast.
Word.
I know. That just, like, Chronicle pushed that through 1 year, super fast, right? And as you know, on average, I'd say a picture book's like 2-3 years, right? Something like that in terms of process. Well, exclamation mark was a story that I had been working on for a number of years. And like about 5 years, I kept pulling it out of my drawer and like tinkering with it. And I just, I was really stuck on a piece. And again, Tom and I, we like to get together a couple times a year and sit down. I mean, we talk on the phone all the time, but we'll sit down and camp out at a coffee house together. And one such time, I brought this with me and I said, I showed it to him. I'm like, this is where it's at. And I was like, don't know what. And he just like blurted out the answer. And I was like, yes. Oh my God, you just solved this. And that was the introduction. I had question mark in there, but in a much different way, and Tom just tweaked it, and the whole thing fell into place. So again, collaboration, right? Now, you can ask, it begs the question, what took me so long to show it to him? And I don't know. It was just one of those things where I was in a little vacuum working on this book. And so again, that was a great moment when Tom said, I see where this goes. Let's make this together. I'm like, yes, please. And it was the opposite, actually, with I Wish You More. Tom showed me the most adorable sketch ever of this little girl, and he just had this one line that said, I wish you more. It was a girl with had buttoned her shirt off, like it was, you know, misbuttoned, and he wrote the line, I wish you more buttons than holes. And I looked at it, and I said, that is just something so poetic. And from that, so he brought this beautiful thing, and the whole book grew from that illustration and sentiment.
See, that I feel like I'm getting here, this magic that that I think is so rare when we pick up picture books, when we parents are at a bookstore and looking at them, when we are in the library, when children are looking at them, you're looking at this finished product, but sometimes I feel like this, like you're saying, the way that they grow out just makes the story even more magical to think that these are just these sentiments. When I read it, I immediately thought, there are going to be children coming up with their own more statements, their own I wish you statements that are going to be so sweet. And it's all, I think, exactly what you're saying, because of the poeticism of the sentiment, that there's a way to be playful there, to play on words and to just play on that, on the feeling of playfulness, of being sweet, that is,
and
is cute. Yeah, I mean, it's reminding me, in our copy room at the school, they have there's a sign that some fifth graders made that said something like, kindness is like a boomerang. When you throw it out, it always comes back to you. And for some reason, that's just in my mind, that there's that kind of playfulness is something that can stick and really connect with anyone.
Well, it does. And that's a good word. It feels like play when we're working together. And even, I mean, we came up with 10 times as many of the, you know, I wish you more this than that. We had pages and pages and pages and pages. And so, you know, it's work, right? Figuring out what's the best, what are the best pairings, and calling it down, and then thinking about the flow of the book. And we were stuck on the ending for a long time. We couldn't quite get the right wording and the right, I mean, now I look at it and I can't imagine it ending any other way, but those things are fun to us, you know, to spend literally weeks on one spread, you know? So.
And how, you know, I mean, you write many picture books, Amy, and to know when is the right one to work on with Tom and when is the right one to you know, submit to a publisher to have a different author or a different illustrator pairing has to just be something that in these years you've worked with Tom, you just must be feeling it, right? Like, this feels like a book that or a story idea that we can collaborate on, and this feels something apart.
I mean, I guess it's a good question. I guess it happens so naturally and organically that I don't know that I almost don't even notice how easy it is to know which book. Like, I mean, and I hope that we seem to just, when we finish one book, not too long after, there'll be another collaboration for us on the horizon, or we'll be working on two things at once. But yeah, I mean, sometimes it is quite evident, like, oh, this is such a Tom book. And yeah, it's great.
I just love it. I just can't hide how much I love that you've got this pairing, that you two can create books together. I think I guess for all of the conversations that I have with authors and illustrators, to know that there is that magic in the pairing of an author with an illustrator in creating a book together, but how it, every once in a while you get those opportunities where I think often the ones that I've heard are, you've done a book together and now you have a chance to do a second or a third, and so now you start getting to work together more personally. It's just when you find the right person to connect with that way, when you find in that way that it's like a marriage, a collaboration, it's got to work, you have to look to each other's strengths and be able to trust one another in the decisions, to know that the thing you're creating, I don't know, to know when to let go of your own ideas and trust the other person, or when to advocate for your own ideas. I just think it's such a beautiful thing when it works. And in your case, it works so, so well.
Well, guess what? There are going to be three lucky kids who are going to have the opportunity to work with Tom directly, because I don't know if you know this, but we're going to be doing a contest for children's students to come up with their own lines. I wish you more this than that. And the three winners will be illustrated by Tom. They will have their own personalized spread. Yeah.
And will they be published somewhere? Will we see them on your site, or on, I don't know, Chronicle site or something like that?
I mean, they'll be they'll
be on the interwebs.
It's gonna yeah, it's a thing. It's a thing.
Wow. Oh, my word. Imagine.
Yeah.
Imagine. I'm going to jump on this. My kids are going to be able to respond to this, too. How exciting to read a book and to make that connection and then get to, when do you ever get a chance to be, to potentially be a part of the story?
Right, to, like, have the story go on. It's kind of interesting.
A special thing. That's a very generous thing that Tom is offering. Wow.
Yeah, he doesn't know. He doesn't know this yet. No, I'm kidding. He knows.
By the way, Tom, if you're listening,
right.
I've picked three winners. Well, that's exciting. I'll look forward. When you post something, or if you haven't posted already, I'll add it to the show notes and make sure I share it. That's really cool.
Excellent.
You've got, Amy, you've got, my word. So you came from advertising, right?
Yep.
Where did the interest in telling stories through film, connecting with people through film, has that always been there, or did that come on later?
Well, it came on later. I don't know if you could say that there's a connection between writing commercials and then what I end up doing a number of years later with my video stuff, my YouTube videos. It feels a little bit different because I was part of a big team, you know, making commercials versus the YouTube videos became a whole different kind of thing. But here's really what happened is in 2008, I read about the flip camera. There was a short New York Times piece about the flip camera. And I was never really drawn to video before in all the years. Even when my kids were small, I wasn't the mom like videoing my kids all the time.
Yeah.
Just wasn't really connected to that as a medium. But the minute I read about the flip camera, I said, this is for me. It's almost like the pencil of video. It fits in the palm of your hand.
Yeah.
It's one button on, one button off. And it was inexpensive. And I was like, I love that thing for some reason. And I went and I knew I had to get it. So
I had no idea that was the genesis, was finding out about a flip cam.
That was it. And this was like pre-iPhone, right? So
right. And for us,
flip camera had its heyday for what was it? Maybe like 3 years, and then
it was in all of our schools because it was so affordable, and you just flip and connect to your USB. It was super easy.
So the first video I ever made, I got the flip camera, loved it, loved the way it felt in my hand. I mean, I know it's a funny thing to say, but that's also what I say often about even writing. Like, I feel like I feel more myself when I have a pen in my hand, like even just that sensation of having the pen in my fingers and in my palm. I had that feeling with this flip camera. And the first video I made was I just went around my house. I was like 17 things I made. And
17 things?
Yeah, that was the first video I ever made. And it all came from that. It just happened kind of unexpectedly. And in making that 17 things I made video, you know, I made this book. I made this child. I made this bed. I made this mess. And then I thought as I was filming things, I'm like, well, who cares about these 18 things that I made? I made this sandwich. The 17 things I made, I thought, well, it'd be interesting to make an 18 thing.
Right.
With other people. And that's how the invitation for the Beckoning of Lovely started. Just in that moment.
All of it.
Yeah.
Amy, this all sprung from a technology tool that I feel like became an extension of you.
100%. That's how it happened.
That's amazing. I've heard your TED Talks. I'm aware of that. The 18 thing that you're making with everyone in Millennial Park all of that was amazing. And 08, 08, 08. But to know that it came from you, I had no idea that it came from you reading an article about Flip.
Well, I feel like it's a huge thing that I don't know about you, but I feel like I'm constantly relearning that, which is that sometimes you really don't need to know. You don't need to see 100 feet ahead. If you could just see 1 foot ahead, and I just knew I wanted to get that camera. I did it. I didn't. Then I was like, I'm going to make this little thing in my house. And I didn't know it was going to turn into the Beckoning of Lovely. Well, then jump ahead, right? It became, you know, 6 incredible years of my life.
Yeah.
But that was not all, you know, a plotted plan from day one. It was pretty much the opposite of that.
That's amazing. I mean, it's that seeing 1 foot ahead, isn't it? That you just don't know. None of us know what's going to happen in 10 years, let alone what's going to happen in one. I mean, that's,
and I think it's also, sometimes it's actually whoppingly detrimental to try to think that far ahead. I mean, I'm not saying like in everything in life, obviously, because we all plan stuff and I do too. And raising a family and all those things, but I'm talking more about the creative act, honing in on that kind of a thing, that you don't have to have it all figured out to begin. You just need to begin. And beginning is its own sort of signal to the universe that you're serious about making something.
I had that same experience with this podcast, that it was a feeling that was there in my head, and there was just it took I've mentioned this before, but it was a library friend of mine, Travis Jonker, that it just took him saying, well, why don't you start it, this podcast? Why don't you just do it? And that became what this is now, where you're looking just at recording one conversation, and then, well, let's talk to this person, and then let's talk to that friend. And so I get that, and I connect with that feeling of not needing to know where it's going to go, because when you are enjoying where you are right now, so many more lovely things allow themselves to happen because you're in the moment.
And the thing starts to tell you. It's almost like it has a power, yeah, and a voice of its own that will direct you as it's evolving, right?
Yeah, no doubt. Amy, yeah, are you just a person that pays attention to the world?
It's kind of my job, isn't it?
No doubt. You're such a great observer.
Well, Saul Bellow said it best. He said, you know, a writer is the job of a writer is to be a first-class noticer.
A first-class noticer. Like that.
Yeah, it's, you know, and so I like
that. Well, keep noticing, Amy. Keep you're doing good. Mm. Did I read right that you are preparing for, or you recently had another TED Talk?
I'm not sure. Well, I've had I think three over the last few years. Maybe you read I do some other work with the TED folks in a different role as a sort of, I help create experiences at the TED conference, at actually the companion. There's TED and then there's TED Active. They're companion conferences. And so at TED Active, this is my third year in a role of helping to create, we call them experiences and provocations and introspections that take place at the conference for the attendees that are in between the talks. So it's one of my favorite gigs in the world. I love it so much.
That's cool. Wow. Just keep being awesome. Wherever this road is taking you, keep writing for our children, but keep being awesome. I just love that. I guess for me, it's always that notion of when a kid discovers an author and discovers all of the books that he or she has written and then looks for more. What more do you find? What do you find on their website? What do you find in connecting with them through a school visit or through a Skype visit or through a book festival? But with you as well, they find this entire way of expressing themselves because of the way that you so clearly express yourself and are connecting with others through video and through your words. And so I think that's a cool thing for your readers to discover, that not only are you writing, but there's this other way of sharing your thoughts and ideas and telling stories as well.
Well, you know, it's like, I just like, it's on my website. Amy's a person who likes to make things. I like making things. And I will tell you that one of my favorite anagrams of all time, you know, and I'm all about, I love the wordplay stuff. So, but an anagram for the word maker is me. AKR.
I love that. That must tickle you pink.
Oh, that was, yeah, it was a happy day figuring that out. So, and you know, I want to tell you one thing, which I feel like your listeners might be interested in this, and it's kind of the inversion of what we're talking about, and that is I'm doing a project this year where once a month I am doing a kids study. So instead of an author study, I've chosen 10 kids around the country. I'm sorry, 12 kids. What? And it's Author Amy Studies You. And it's like, I'm doing these like reports on different children. And it is, then, you know, it was a contest that I put out in social media, and teachers and parents nominated these different students for different reasons, and then I chose 12, and I'm on my third month. I started January 1st. It's been
check it out.
It's been amazing. So I'm not sure at what point am I going to start to share it and like in what form. I'm still kind of like we just talked about. I'm letting it gestate a bit. So I have studied. I'm on my third child right now, but I'm not sure if I'm going to make a video for each one or how it's going to be. But
These are kids from all over the country.
Yeah.
So what is studying mean for you? Are you conducting like interview over the phone? Are you okay?
We have Skype
or something.
I created a pretty extensive questionnaire that they answer, and the first student was 14. The second one, a 14-year-old boy. Second one is a 5-year-old girl, and right now I'm doing 10-year-old twin boys. So yeah, it's a range, range of ages and all over.
Are you learning a lot from them already?
I am. It's really quite fascinating, and really, I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
That's so cool. I can't wait for you to share it. How fun.
So.
How fun of you to turn it on its head. I hope other authors follow suit and study.
I hope so, too.
Celebrate kids as well.
I think it should be a thing.
We should do. Having just gotten out of World Read Aloud Day and celebrations like that, imagine if we had a whole week to celebrate kids where we do just that, where all of us teachers and authors and illustrators and everyone like that just spends time focusing on children and celebrating children and turning the spotlight on them.
I love it. If each author, you know, an illustrator chose a kid to study, you know, it'd be a really interesting collection, I think.
That'd be amazing. And it would also make kids feel like $1 million, which is what I think we're all in the business to do. Amy, this has been a total joy. Before I let you go, can I ask you one more question that may or may not be fitting for where we are? Well, I think it is. It's all about teamwork. It's all about camaraderie. It's all about friendship. Here we go. I'm assembling an all-star kid-lit dream team kickball tournament. And Amy, I would love to know what one person from the kid-lit world, alive or past, you would want on your team and why.
Okay, well, I think it's kind of hands down. I'm going to go with, and tell me if he's been chosen before, William Steig.
Oh, good one.
Yeah.
He maybe once he's been chosen. He's been mentioned a lot for his line work. I just had a Chicago native, Matt Cordell, was just on talking about Steig and his influence in that wonderful line that Steig had.
He is just in a league of his own, and I want to play on his team for sure. I love every book he's written. My all-time favorite, I'll say, is Sylvester and the Magic Pebble.
Yeah.
But I love all of his books, Brave Irene, Amos and Boris, Pete's Pizza, the wordplay book, C to B.
Yeah, I love the wordplay book. Smart Feller. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he's good.
So he's my pick.
Oh, good guy. William Steig is a person that I feel like there's a handful of names that have, I think if we did enough interviewing, we'd find that they've just reached everyone. And that's maybe why we have such great children's literature today, because there were these really great roots to pull from. So I'm glad that you are one of those people out there creating wonder and connecting with our children now, Amy, and I wish you all the best luck in the future and the way you're connecting with others. Cannot wait to see this author, Amy Studies You, and everything else you have. And congratulations again on I Wish You More's release.
Thank you so much, Matthew. Thanks for having me, and my best to you and your whole crew over there.
Like what you hear? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a comment on the blog at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes through stars or reviews. Doing so not only gives me helpful feedback, it also helps to bring new listeners to the podcast, and that's a very good thing.
We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.